This episode is sponsored by Paleo Valley. Paleo Valley's meat sticks have been a lifesaver during this hot summer. Since they're shelf-stable, I always have 3 Paleo Valley meat sticks in my bag at all times. It's also been perfect for my boys' lunch boxes. I love Paleo Valley's grass-finished beef sticks and pasture-raised turkey sticks because they support U.S. family farmers that focus on regenerative agriculture. These meat sticks are from animals that have never been fed grains, soy, corn, or GMOs, and have never been given antibiotics. The spices in these meat sticks are also 100% organic. The sticks come in 5 different flavors, and my favorite is the original beef stick, and my boys love the teriyaki beef sticks and the original pasture-raised turkey stick. Paleo Valley's meat sticks are a perfect snack and frankly a great value without skimping on quality. Each stick is about $2 with our discount code, and it comes in a 10-pack bag. Make sure to support this podcast and head over to paleovalley.com/CATG and use code CATG to get 15% off your first order. Thanks for listening and supporting the Cutting Against the Grain podcast. Laura and I are just going to be talking really candid. This is what this podcast is all about.
It's one thing to say, I want to eat something else that's not meat. It's a whole nother thing to say, you need to eat something else that's not meat.
If you notice that you're jumping from diet to diet, at a certain point, you have to wonder, the only common denominator is me.
Get outside, go for a walk, breathe some fresh air, and stay happy and healthy and take care of yourselves.
Welcome to the Cutting Against the Grain podcast. Get ready for some real talk with your hosts, Judy Cho and Laura Spath. Welcome back to the Cutting Against the Grain podcast. My name is Laura Spath, and I am joined by my friend and co-host, Judy Cho. And we want to start today. I know we haven't actually got a chance to recap KetoCon, and specifically, I think what you and I loved a lot about KetoCon in general was the women's carnivore panel. We got a lot of really great feedback from it. That was like on the first day, and I loved that we got to kind of then talk to people about it. I heard so many awesome things about it the next couple of days as I was meeting people. And we wanted to discuss kind of some topics that were talked about in there, and then just like the panel overall. And I think the thing I liked best about it was how different we all were that were on the panel. So I don't know if we want to talk about like who was on it and how all that came about, but I loved that the variety of women that we had speaking on that women's carnivore panel.
Yeah, it was interesting. The panel was supposed to just be a women's carnivore panel, and it became mostly about hormones, which kind of makes sense because I think one of the biggest things women generally struggle with is sex hormone imbalances as well as thyroid. But you're right. I didn't think about how we are all really different, but we are. Maybe we just go through the name. So you were on it. And do we say ages or like the things we struggled with? I don't know.
Well, I think that's interesting. So like for names wise, right, it was Dr. Elizabeth Bright and Dr. Lisa Wiedemann and you and me and Danny, who's the Carnivore Keto Fitness on Instagram. I think the awesome thing is, first of all of us, and I didn't realize this, have been carnivore for at least 5 years. I think I was the baby carnivore of the group. Like you and I were the shortest amount of time. So we have a lot of long-term carnivore women on this panel. I also think we all have come to carnivore for a variety of different reasons, right? I was severely obese and needed to lose weight. There was other people who were underweight and needed to heal eating disorders. You know, you talk about that often. Lisa has talked about that in her history as well with eating disorders. There was people who needed to heal hormones. You know, Dr. Bright is an expert on like the high fat method. That's the other piece too, is that we all have been doing this for over 5 years, and yet we all eat very differently, even within a carnivore diet.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And what I found so fascinating was that none of us are taking any type of medication. And some of them are, I don't know exactly how old Dr. Bright is. I think she just turned 60, actually. But Dr. Bright and Lisa is, I think she's in her mid-50s. I forget. Sorry. But none of them are on any type of hormone medication or have been through some terrible menopause. So I think that was very telling. Even though we do all do carnivore somewhat differently. And all of us say that none of us need carbs. And so I think that was the most powerful message to all the women that were there, is that you don't need carbohydrates for optimal hormones, health, and thyroid function.
And I think even in the keto space, that's like the number one thing. Whenever women are having a hormone issue, the first thing that you're told is you need to reintroduce carbs. And to see five different women at different weights and stages in their life and different stages of menopause or, you know, childbearing years, like we are all such different ages and hormone healths. We've all been through roller coasters as well. And yet none of us need exogenous hormones. None of us need carbs. I shared a story during that panel that, like, when I was carnivore and I was losing weight, I had gotten too thin. You know, I was under eating and over exercising at the time, and my hormones were out of whack. And I reached out to several experts in the keto carnivore space, and every single person told me I needed to introduce carbs again. And so I made myself like some eggs and some sweet potatoes and some berries. And 24 hours later, I was eating a pint of Ben and Jerry's, and I had three Snickers in one sitting. Like, I was not capable having some sweet potatoes and having some berries. I told myself like, oh, you need carbs for hormones. And then the next thing you know, I was eating ice cream, and it caused me to have a spiral. And so I just knew I couldn't incorporate carbs, quote, for my hormone health. And I was so defeated. And so I had to figure out how to fix it without that, right? And so obviously I did. That's the short version that I've talked a lot about. I'm sure we've talked about it on here a bunch, is that I was able to then fix my hormones, get my cycle back, be a healthy balance, but still was able to stay carnivore and didn't have to struggle with reintroducing carbs to heal that.
I think the average person would have listened to those doctors and said, because even for you, for that split meal, you said, I'm going to try the carbs because that's the only response I'm getting. How would you recommend empowering the people listening to say, that's probably not the answer? It's not always carbs, which I find so interesting that it's always a macro that is just the issue for hormone issues, which it's not. But what made you decide that I can't do the carbs, so I need to try to fix this some other way when everyone else was telling you, you need to add carbs back?
So I knew that, like, it kind of was this slap in the face that I couldn't handle the carbs. And so at that point, I was like, this can't work. And honestly, I was like, maybe I can't fix my hormones right away. Maybe I just have to like do this for a while because I'm not healed enough to be able to introduce carbs. Like, I'm just too broken to be able to have carbs. And so I wasn't on this like mission to fix my hormones. I was still just on a mission to like not go off the rails again and not fall back into addiction. And I just thought like, well, let's see how long I can ride this out before things get worse while I try to figure it out. And in the meantime, I had to be honest with myself about what other stressors that were impacting me. And that was the too much exercise. I was over fasting. I was under eating. I had major stress in my life. You know, I wasn't sleeping great. And when I started kind of taking a step back and realizing all of the different components that can affect your hormones and stress, then I started to realize it was so much more than just like add carbs, because add carbs can be a Band-Aid.
Right.
You know, we've talked about that. Taking out carbs is a stressor on you. But for me, it was a combination of the other six major stressors that I was putting on myself that I could have added carbs and likely fixed my hormones if I was able to moderate it, which is why I think that is such popular and common advice, is because you can quickly, you know, reduce the stress that your body is under by simply adding carbs, because it kind of gives everything a break a little bit. But I had to mainly just be honest with myself about what else was I doing that was impacting my stress on my body.
Yeah, I think when you add carbs, you eventually eat a little bit more because your insulin is higher. So then you'll end up eating more. And I think it's some of that excess calories that will then support the entire hormonal system. But if you go overboard, then it's actually a bigger stress than if you just had not added the carbs. And I think that's where people have to have that real conversation. If you can add just 50 grams of carbs a day and they're relatively healthy, then maybe the carbs route may support you with your hormones. But most people cannot regulate 50 grams of carbs and just limit it to only sweet potato, only certain veggies, only certain fruits, because then it becomes, well, over the weekend, what's so wrong if I have a little bit of the cake? You can support hormones with a little bit of carbs. I think ultimately it's not the carbs though. It's that because all hormones, whether it's sex hormones or thyroid hormones, like we just talked about in the last podcast, none of them are supported with carbohydrates. It is primarily from proteins, fats, and iodine. And so if we understand that the only benefit I see of carbohydrates being added to the mix is that you will end up eating more, which will then support your body from a caloric perspective.
And we do see that, you know, we all made it a point to talk about the fact that so many women are under eating on carnivore. You know, for my meal last week, I had 4 eggs and 8 pieces of bacon, which is a tremendous, like that feels like a lot of food. Well, when you input that into a calorie tracker, it's like 650 calories. And I know a lot of women who could eat 4 eggs and 8 pieces of bacon at as a midday meal and not be hungry for the rest of the day. To be honest, I probably didn't need to eat dinner because I wasn't physically hungry for dinner. But that's 650 calories.
Right.
And over time, you know, your body, your metabolism will slow down. Your hormones will be negatively impacted because you're not eating enough. And like you said, that those carbs can spike your appetite. You can eat more. Spikes your insulin, you know, all of those things. And people sometimes just like don't want to eat when they're not hungry. And you don't realize like how much of a negative impact that can have when you're under eating consistently.
I think that's the root cause issue for why so many people say keto and carnivore don't work. It's because you're finally not feeling hungry. And then you overly fast in an unhealthy way. And then when you undereat for like that for so long, it starts ruining your hormones and it's just easier to blame the diet, but it's usually not the case.
Yeah. One thing too, we talked about on that panel was the high fat carnivore. And, you know, you and I have been somewhat critical of that in the past, but only from a long-term perspective or right. from like a, this is what people should be permanently doing, because you most of the time will either undereat protein or you will gain weight. But what was discussed on the panel, and I will say this too, you know, we've disagreed with Dr. Bright on her high fat protocol for that reason, right? If you're under eating protein or if you're doing it long term. But she does a really great job, and she did within the panel, of just talking about how it's a temporary protocol. Eating this 80, 85% fat is for healing your hormones if you're having issues, and it's not made to be this long-term protocol. It's certainly not made to be a weight loss protocol. It is made to be something that is used temporarily to heal your hormones and fuel your body.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of discussions with her about this. I mean, she will go as far to see if people have really bad cortisol levels or imbalances that she'll recommend no exercise at all. And I mean, I don't agree with that. So I think if your cortisol is that rock bottom that you can't even go for a walk because you just need to support your adrenals, maybe that's a temporary support. I just think there's something more underlying. I think everyone is naturally made to be able to walk even a little bit, even if it's 20 minutes. And I think the bigger issue for me with the 80, 85% was she would really cut the protein. So then her protein amounts was like 50, 60 grams per person. And for anybody on a carnivore diet, it's too low. And then if people use it long term, it becomes a bigger issue. Whereas I'm okay with 80% healing, but I never go lower on the protein, which then will likely make you gain weight. So that's where it gets super tricky when someone's like, I eat 80% fat and they're super lean. They're most definitely not eating enough protein.
Right. And that is very healing. We've talked about that fat load might be necessary, but you're likely not going to lose weight doing it.
Right.
Simply because you are going to be needing to eat an excess of calories. And for me, when I was having hormone issues, I needed to gain some weight and I needed to do this reverse dieting method a little bit. I had to gain a little weight. I had to overeat so that my body was getting proper nutrition and fuel and fat and protein and all of those things. And for me, that fixed it. I've never actually been able to get as lean as I was before. You know, during the panel, Dr. Bright called her little tiny, you know, she's so thin, but like, you know, she has like a, you know, she's like, this is my, patted her belly and was like, this is my hormone protection. Like, this is my excess hormone storage. You know, our bodies as women are not meant to be super, super lean.
Right.
we are not meant to be 15% body fat as women, or even under 20%. Like, I'm not good at knowing what the percentages are, but, you know, we are not meant to be as lean as men are. And usually for proper hormone health. I mean, how many people do we know that are fitness models and women who do bodybuilding competitions? And when they get super lean for competitions like that, they lose their hormones. Professional gymnasts and athletes and dancers and like all of these women who are putting their bodies through tremendous stress and working to have their bodies be super lean end up losing their cycle because it's not healthy for your hormones as a woman to be that lean.
Yeah. And the body will always make the best choices with what it has. So if you are putting that stress, you're becoming a bikini competitor, becoming super thin, whereas a woman, you have now a six pack. A lot of those women will indirectly end up having no period. And the reason is your body thinks that it's under a lot of duress and stress and then thinks, well, this body cannot even consider having a baby. And so therefore we will take away the period to protect the body from dying. And so that's ultimately why it happens. And so therefore, when you start eating more carbs or more calories, the period coming back is often, it happens more often because of the fact that you're just nourishing the body better. Maybe it's gaining a little bit of weight. Generally speaking, when people are keto and carnivore and they start eating sufficiently, they should be getting their periods back.
Yeah, absolutely. We see it happen, you know, time and time again. The other cool thing about a panel like that, and because we all come from such different backgrounds and different viewpoints within carnivore, is we said this last year too, like I just love being able to disagree with people in the moment, but then also be able to focus on like, we're sitting up there talking about all the things that we have in common, but then we also get to kind of say like, well, I disagree because of this reason, or that's not going to work for me. Or like, it's just a cool opportunity to have a lot of different perspectives all speaking around the same topic, you know, right away.
Yeah, I loved the women's carnivore panel for that, because I think sometimes we're not always on the same page.
Right.
But I think we all are on the same page if we have to agree to find what works for us. And obviously, Dr. Bright focuses on thyroid and hormones. So for her, everybody needs some hormone support, which will then have her push the high fat even more. So I get it in context. Where then, I don't know if that set the stage for me to expect, okay, so we can all be on the same panel, agree to disagree on certain things, and still be friendly. But then we go to the regular carnivore panel and there were thoughts said, which I totally disagreed with, but I wasn't on the panel. And no one decided to say, except for like one, I think there was one incident where Dr. Bright disagreed with Dr. Kilt, but everything else, it was just okayed by the community. It was so frustrating.
Yeah, that was an interesting panel. I was moderating it because I was the MC for Sunday, but the panel was really like set up as a carnivore doctors panel, and everybody up there was a doctor of some kind, except for me, and I really was only there as a moderator. And all of the questions that came in were like very heavily medical questions, and kind of very specific medical questions. And I think it's because obviously they were all doctors. So it wasn't more like general lifestyle carnivore questions. It was all like very specific carnivore medical questions, I guess. And there was at one point where like, I feel like I shouldn't have said anything, honestly,
no,
like
glad
because
you
I
said
wasn't
something.
A doctor.
I think like, you were the only one saying the right things or...
Yeah. But because there was definitely a moment when I like saw you, like you were sitting there and you and I caught eyes of like, people are asking like, what happens if the diet doesn't heal me? And unfortunately, this is the thing that you and I kind of like go around and around and around about, is that there are too many experts and doctors who are saying like, do carnivore harder. Like you just have to be more strict. You have to cut out more plants, you have to cut out more seasonings, you have to cut out like all of these things, and you have to just be a more perfect carnivore to heal whatever is going on with you. And there was nobody else that was saying like, maybe there's something that the diet can't fix, right? And I kind of jumped in, somebody was talking about ulcerative colitis, right? And I only know from listening to this podcast with you is that if you have ulcerative colitis, you most likely have CIRS, right? Chronic inflammatory response syndrome. And everybody up there was just like, you should do this for carnivore. You should do this protocol for carnivore. You should just be more patient and all these kind of things. And the person was like walking away. And I kind of just like grabbed the mic as I was getting ready to ask the next question. I was like, or maybe you have something else going on, sirs. And it was hard. It's so hard because I didn't feel like I'm not the doctor or the expert, but like, why is nobody else talking about this?
Right.
Like, why is nobody else admitting that maybe the diet can't fix everything? And right. that's okay. That was really frustrating.
I'm okay if people don't bring up SIRS. If you're not bought into SIRS, I don't expect you to bring that up. But I would feel so much better if people said, maybe the diet isn't enough. And there's no one there that was willing. And I think some of the expertise, I mean, Dr. Kevin Stock, right? He's a dentist. So obviously he's not going to know anything, or maybe he does know. But I mean, his profession is not gut health. So, you know, I was asked to be part of that panel and I chose not to be in it because I felt it was too similar to the women's carnivore panel. So I thought right. everyone would be able to handle it. It'll be basics of carnivore. And I was so disappointed that I walked off the area because I just, the two main questions that I kept thinking about that was so frustrating was the ulcerative colitis. The mom asked for her son and right. said, my son gets into an ulcerative UC flare every so often when he's just eating meat. And so I think it was Dr. Kiltz that said, oh, just have him fast. And then after his spiel, she said, oh, he does fast. He does. And I don't know what protocol, but he does some type of protocol. But as soon as he eats meat again, eventually he gets back into a flare.
Right.
And it was just the...
Well, then he should fast more. He was told you should fast more or then you should do more high fat. Like, that's just not... It's not working for him. He can't not eat forever.
Right, right. And so there's another option of saying, well, maybe look at something else other than diet. Because at a certain point, if you're eating the cleanest diet and the diet is not moving the needle enough, maybe you have to explore other things. Like if they just said that, like I would be cool. But for them, they were left with, we just need a carnivore harder or we need a fast harder. And eventually everything will get improved. I mean, I think Dr. Kilt said, if you fast enough, your microbiome will completely heal itself. And for some people, that can be true, but it's rare. Because I focus on gut health, and to hear those things being said, I just imagined my own son being sick and then being told, just tell him to fast more. Just tell him to just give it time. And then another question was, hey, I have rheumatoid arthritis and I'm just starting the diet. How long, or maybe it was fibromyalgia, I think it was rheumatoid arthritis. And she said, how long should I expect before I heal? And I think Dr. Baker went on about what he's seen in healing, but no one had a definitive answer, but they basically said, just give it time. And then I think ultimately they said between 3 to 6 months. Again, I think it's just sometimes autoimmune, if it's not healing enough, if your symptoms haven't improved enough, there could be something else. And I used to also believe that if you just carnivored harder, it would work, and it doesn't. And I think what it does to people long term is what we talked about Craig Emmerich or other people, that it's not the diet. And when we say just focus on the diet, we're making these people slowly degrade in health. And I think it's honestly unethical. And so that's why I couldn't sit there anymore and like be okay with what they were representing. And I know that they don't mean harm by it. And maybe it's just because they don't work in this nuanced space that I work in. But I was heartbroken and I walked off because I was upset.
I think one of the questions too that got asked, it might have been after you left, but like somebody was like, so if I feel fine eating some vegetables occasionally and I don't have any health issues from it, I don't have any reactions to it, like, why shouldn't I eat some vegetables occasionally if I want to? And Dr. Kilt said, because they're silently killing you. And I was like, bro, come on. This is where we look ridiculous as carnivores. Right. Like, yeah, if I eat Brussels sprouts, it's going to cause me bloating. It's going to cause me gut issues. Some people eat too much spinach. It's going to give them oxalate issues. Right. It's going to cause you flares. Some people eat certain vegetables and plants and it's going to cause them eczema and inflammation. My joints flare up. But if I want to eat the tops of Penelope's asparagus because she, for some reason, is crazy and only eats the stalks and doesn't eat the top, if I eat three tops of an asparagus or I eat a couple of pickles, like, they're not silently killing me. This is where we look ridiculous. It's to say, don't eat those things if they're causing you negative issues. And if you don't like them, you don't need them for health reasons. You can get all of the nutrients that you need from meat. You don't need vegetables for the nutrients. But like, if you want to eat a couple of vegetables occasionally, and that makes this more sustainable for you to live this right. lifestyle long term, then don't stress people out about the fact that some random bite of vegetable is silently killing them. And then like 10 minutes later, he talked about the fact that he eats ice cream with pure cane sugar in it occasionally. And I, again, should not have said anything, but I jumped in that moment and I was like, wait. I thought that's a plant. Cane sugar is a plant. I thought it was silently killing us. And he's like, well, sugar is fine in moderation. No, I'm sorry. 99% of the audience in KetoCon, if they have ice cream with cane sugar in it, is within minutes, just like me, eating Ben and Jerry's and Snicker bars. I'm sorry. Most people out there cannot handle. He also eats French fries because he fries them in beef tallow. Like, I'm not eating French fries unless I'm also eating chicken nuggets and dipping it in. Like most people can't moderate those things. And right. so for some reason, we're in this world of saying cane sugar and potatoes fried in beef tallow are fine, but you can't have a piece of a vegetable because it's silently killing you. Like, we could just confuse people. It's no wonder people are confused and irritated with like the carnivore messaging.
I mean, there is truth to plants having toxins and anti-nutrients in this, the glyphosate that's sprayed on them. But if most people can tolerate some level of plants, then they're not, I mean, you can argue that everything in our life is slowly killing us, right? Because once you're no longer growing, you're slowly dying. So after you hit puberty and you no longer grow anymore, well, we're all slowly dying every single day. So it's just, it's kind of silly. I didn't know that he said he ate the potatoes. I think somebody after the panel told me that. I didn't know that he ate potatoes, but potatoes are super high in oxalates. So it's just interesting. Like when I had lunch with Sally Norton, she said, of all the potatoes, you should not be eating the white potato. And I asked her, oh, I thought sweet potatoes were worse. And she says, no, but we eat potatoes in every meal, chips, French fries, etc. And so she would never eat potatoes. And obviously she's an oxalate specialist, so that's her thing. But it just shows you, you cannot say in the same messaging, these plants are killing you, but here's like some of the stuff that I eat. Or you can say plants have toxins. Some of them are not ideal for certain individuals. Figure out the ones that don't work for you. But since you right. said you specific individual that's asking this specific individualized question are saying that they don't bother me, then if it helps you to stay sustainable, consistent with this diet. But if you focus on meat as a central thing that you're eating and eating sufficient protein for your lean body mass and longevity, then yeah, maybe it's okay that you eat some plants. And I heard from somebody, I can't remember who, that Dr. Baker then said, I don't agree that plants are fully killing you in his talk.
So I told you that, and I love that. So Dr. Baker's speech later, which I really, really, really loved, was about the myths of carnivore, like busting the myths of carnivore. And he didn't say anything on the panel. I was frustrated, but I also understand like he doesn't want to sit up there and argue with people. So his talk that he gave a couple hours later talked about the fact that if you want to eat some plants, like all plants are poison and killing you, he's like, is a myth. Like if you want to eat some plants, eat them. Some of them are causing you issues, but you're fine. Like there is right. the hormetic effect where maybe a little bit of toxins are fine and your body's getting stronger. And like a lot of anti-carnivore people use that as an argument. And he's like, yeah, there's nothing that's not necessarily invalid. And there's nothing wrong with, depending on how you feel from them and how they react to you, like there's nothing wrong with eating a small amount of plants if you want to. You still don't need to, but you can if you want. He also said like another myth of carnivore is that like your LDL doesn't matter and it could be a sky high and it doesn't matter at all. And there's, you know, he said that's a myth, right? Like, yeah, you can have higher LDL and that's fine, but at some point it does matter. And we do need to look at why that's happening. And it's not this blanket thing that's like, doesn't matter at all. He did touch on like the, you have to eat organs and said that was a myth. You don't, you know, you don't, he did say like, sorry, I love ranchers. I love regenerative farmers. I love what we're doing in that regard for the environment, but you don't have to eat grass finished, grain finished, right. regenerative, organic meat constantly. Like there's literally no difference in all the studies that they've done. And I forget what the other ones were, but he did a great job of addressing that and basically saying like, no, not all plants are killing you. It's just, it's hard in a panel like that. Like, people don't want to sit up there and argue, but you feel like you're not getting all sides, you know?
Yeah, but then in the women's panel, I felt that we were able to go back and forth and just have a friendly conversation. So I guess it could just be different personality types. If we think about why we come to a carnivore diet, people are not coming for dogma. They're just coming for, you seem to look healthy. You seem to have figured it out. What did you do so that I can heal too? And ultimately, that's what it is. And when people are advertising things that are not necessarily true, it will cause people to think, it's just that conversation we have over and over of, you start self-reflecting that I'm the problem. It's my fault that I'm not getting better. It's because I'm not that strict. And it's just not true. I will tell you that people that go through chronic inflammatory response syndrome and the protocol, and that's not why everyone's sick, but the portion of my community that's super sick that has gone through that, they can eat other things now. They're not choosing to stay carnivore. Yes, 85 to 90% of their meals is mostly meat. But from there, if they want to have a little garlic or a little bit of onions, they were never able to before because they'd have the histamine flushes and they'd have these really bad gas and bloat, and they don't struggle with that anymore. And so if you can get to more deeper healing and be able to tolerate certain plants, I think that's a win. And when our community becomes so dogmatic that, no, you just need to try more, you need to fast more, you got to change your macros, fine, do all of those things for a short bit. Obviously, be honest with yourself if you've really been trying, but at a certain point, it's no longer the diet.
Right. And carnivore is a really, really powerful tool that does take you to baseline. We talk about this often, where like, it can help you identify anything that's going on that is food related, and it can heal a lot of things, but it can't do everything. And I think this is where the goal of life and the carnivore diet is not to see who can be the strictest, most perfect carnivore for the longest. And we kind of get caught up in that. And I think like Michaela has been really open. Michaela Peterson, who started this like lion diet, which is beef, salt, and water. Like, she didn't start that to be like the coolest, most strict carnivore. She started that because it's literally the only things that she could eat without it affecting her. And she's been sharing publicly, I'll just share like what she shared publicly on social media, is that she doesn't want to eat this all the time forever. Like, she would like to eat other things, but she just can't. And she's now working to heal so that hopefully she can be able to physically incorporate other foods in her life and in her diet. And I think we're all of us are hopefully the same way, where we want to incorporate as much as we can and as much as we're able to tolerate. There are certain things I won't eat because they affect my digestive system. And then there's also certain things that I won't eat because they affect me mentally and trigger my addiction. But other than that, I'm really not concerned about what the food is labeled as. And I'm not eating something because I want to and can, but it's not considered carnivore, right? I just, like, this is where I find the most simplicity and the most sanity. But I'm not trying to be perfect, most strict carnivore for the longest.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's just the subset that I work with, but none of them are trying to do carnivore to be cool or dogmatic. They really think that they have to be dogmatic in order to heal. And we may start with that for maybe just a couple weeks. But beyond that, their goal is to be able to eat other foods. Their goal has never been, I just want to eat a certain type of meat or be a certain type of carnivore. So if you are listening to this and you are being carnivore because you are trying to heal some type of illness or chronic symptom that you have, just know at a certain point that it's not that you're not carnivoring harder, or that you haven't found the secret macros or the secret meats that make you feel perfect. Sometimes it's actually the environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where it's hard to, like, I know you and I have talked, like, are we going to talk about SIRS again? Like, is this really what, you know, like, it kind of, we jokingly say like it all comes down to SIRS. And in some ways, that's just because that's the anecdote from what we are seeing, is if the diet is not fixing you, the majority of people are finding that they do have SIRS. And it's hard. I know there's actually some like predominant people in the community who have come out and said, like, since Michaela's been more public about what she's going through and how she's trying to heal, I saw her like arguing with another prominent figure in this space, like on Twitter, where they were just saying like, whatever this fake mold illness is that you think you're dealing with is not real. And she was like, jumped on and was saying like, yes, it is real. Like 100%, this is what's going on with me. And it was just it's unfortunate that this is another thing that people are going to disagree over. And it, I hope it doesn't prevent people from finding real healing, because they're being told that no, it's actually the diet that you have to do better and harder.
Yeah. And I think people will lose that battle. I cannot, like, this is what I was telling Laura offline, but there's, I am now under client confidentiality with so many people that I can't bring up certain things, but I can bring up.
That's why I'm talking about it, because I just watched their Instagram. And so I'm just telling you what I see on people's social media that they've publicly shared. That's why Judy can't talk about that stuff anymore.
Yeah. So trust me, there's so much I can argue back, but I can't for certain people, right. But I can share what I've, what we've shared on a YouTube video, for example. So there's several videos that have not come out yet, and they all openly talk about that they have SIRS. And so I think it will become undeniable eventually. So if people want to, you know, dig their feet into, no, it's not SIRS, I can get fixed, and it's always just about the diet, then so be it. But the evidence is just surmounting to an amount that they will never be able to ignore. And I'll tell you that so Carnivore Bar, Philip Meese, just tested. He's positive for SIRS, and he openly talks about it on an upcoming video with him. Sylvia Tabor from Carnivore Snacks, she has SIRS. She's going to be on my channel. She's going to openly talk about it. Strong Sisters, the younger one, Sarah Armstrong, she has SIRS, and she openly talks about it in an interview with me. I interviewed a singer-songwriter, Olivia Farabaugh. She has SIRS and openly talks about it. There are other people. I mean, Michaela has talked about how she was diagnosed with SIRS and now she's getting treatment. I can't say much more than that, but it just shows you these are some big people. Like, if you think about it in our world of carnivore, Sylvia started Carnivore Snacks because she couldn't tolerate any other jerky because she was so sensitive. And so we blame the plants. We blame this. And I'm sure the SIRS made her sensitive to the plant toxins. But as she realizes she has SIRS and her whole biohacking journey, a lot of the root cause is SIRS. When she heals, the question will be, can you actually eat other jerkies now? And right. I mean, the decision of eating other things are different, but you just have to wonder, she filled a need that she needed, but now she's learning that it wasn't a dietary thing.
Well, the same thing with Carnivore Bar. I mean, that's meat and fat and salt, and it's the same thing. The Strong Sisters had kind of like been on a journey to find, they've been talked about, like they bought a farmhouse that was covered in mold, which makes so much sense with SIRS. And they kind of have been on a journey of like trying to find what foods they can eat and tolerate and that keep them healthy. They've kind of been sharing that all publicly for years. And obviously Michaela started the Lion Diet because it was all that she could tolerate. Like, all of these people are the cornerstones and foundation of what this diet looks like. And they're all creating these products and this plan on something that they actually can tolerate. But it's really that they have to now address, like, what's the root issue of what's going on with them.
Right. And so Sarah says the diet didn't fix her. So I just want, like, I can't say much more, but
it'll come out and people can watch that video. And I think they're going to start sharing stuff too on their channels.
Yeah. But I don't know if they'll say that the repeat diet doesn't, like, I don't know if they'll ever go there, but whether she added carbs or not, it did not fix her when it came to her overall health and illness. But yeah, more to come. I just think that's fine. If I do think SIRS is a spectrum. I think that you can have like a genetic marker, or you can have some mild signs, but if it doesn't go into a full flare, so you're not in this chronic inflammatory state where you notice all the symptoms, maybe you're not at the point you need a test. I really believe, because I think about this all the time. Well, 200 years ago, they weren't doing blood work. There had to be people with SIRS. So maybe there's just a subset that had it and they live long. Maybe they had some symptoms, but it was just kind of, okay, we just moved on with our lives. But there is a subset of people that are super, super sick. And those are the people that I think they should test, because they have an option to live a life that's not as restricted. So even if you and I had SIRS, the fact that we're not really that sick, we can always test, but we don't have to because we're not there. So I think the people that are listening, just because you have a couple of the symptoms doesn't mean, oh my gosh, I need a test. Like, that's different. And that's your own case that you have to figure out what makes sense for you. But I think when you're like Michaela sick, or Sarah sick, or Sylvia sick, or Philip sick, that's when these people, they don't want it to be something else. They found these perfect products or perfect diets, but they're not getting better right. enough that they're willing to do expensive blood work and then go through a whole protocol because they're hoping that this can finally be the answer for them. And their markers show that they're suffering from SIRS.
Yeah. And time will tell, like, if all of these people who are these major pillars, like, start healing and are able to eat and incorporate other things, like, it obviously doesn't take away from their products, but it also helps. Right. I mean, it's going to be huge. And I think I am, like, anxiously awaiting that. But I agree with you. If people don't need to go looking for problems, we've said that for years of, like, I'm not out there testing for SIRS because I'm fine, right? Like, I know what I can eat and what I can't eat just from a mental standpoint. But I'm not sick and having issues like those people that you mentioned are. So I don't think it's something that, like, you need to go looking for problems if right, you're not right. having any.
No, that's exactly it. And the one thing she also said in her stories, Michaela Peterson said in her stories, was she said it's her whole family that's been suffering from SIRS. So she literally brought up her mom and her dad. If it's her mom and dad that are also suffering from SIRS, and I don't know how strict of a carnivore diet they're on, but if they heal, imagine if they start talking about it on the Joe right. Rogan shows or whatever shows they come on and say, hey, actually, carnivore helped me, but the real true illness was SIRS. I mean, this is not something that you can ignore long. So it's unfortunate that other people are, I don't know who you were talking to that she was arguing with on Twitter, but it's unfortunate that people aren't open, but I'm not surprised because I dealt with it with vitamin A and the liver stuff. And yeah. I'm just hopeful that, yes, this is a hard disease. Sometimes it really sucks. But I'm hopeful that our community can truly find healing. That doesn't mean that you should stray so far from a carnivore diet. I don't think Michaela will ever go just like a sad diet or anything. But
right.
I think that we've learned that meat does so much healing, but we can do even more healing than just the diet alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we have to make sure that we are not siloing ourselves to, you know, preaching only that, like, meat and diet is the fix for everything. And I think
right.
obviously, we work very hard at that, but I think as a community, we still have a lot to learn and to be open with, to say, like, we've labeled ourselves. We did this whole episode on, like, what's the definition of carnivore, because it's easy to say, like, I'm keto, which typically means you're 20 grams of carbs or less, and, like, some, you know, it's very easy to define what that is. But especially now, as people are realizing, you know, I think carnivore is a spectrum at this point, and it doesn't have to be this, like, there's no specific list of foods. Like, if you're carnivore, yeah, you eat a lot of meat, but then whatever else that looks like can be really different. And it's kind of a spectrum at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hopeful that the other people in the space will be open and say, yeah, maybe carnivore doesn't fix everything. But I also think when it's tied to business and financials and money making and coaches and programs and who knows whatever they're selling, but when it's tied to that, will they do the right thing and be open to exploring? I mean, I used to say that carnivore fixed everything too, because I literally thought it did, because it did for me. And I had to openly say, no, it doesn't, because I had right. a subset of my community that wasn't healing. And that's fine. I focus on gut health, and sometimes gut health is a band-aid because you're actually suffering from SIRS. So I'm okay doing that, because the intention for both of us is to help people heal. And I just hope that other people will be willing, even if there's no, like, financial gain for them.
Well, and it also circles back then to what we were talking about earlier with carbs, of, like, well, maybe we sound so dogmatic saying you don't need carbs for, like, and I think that's not what we're saying. We're saying if you want to eat carbs, go eat
right,
carbs.
Right.
But again, it's to say, do you need to eat plants for your health? No. But if you want to eat them, you should be able to eat some plants yes. from your health perspective. Same thing. Most people should be able to handle some carbs. I think there's a whole addiction element that is different yes. with when it comes to carbs. But the part that you and I get frustrated about is saying you need to eat carbs for your hormone health. And obviously that's the part that we disagree with. You could do whatever you want. I don't care what you eat or what you do, as long as it's something that's keeping you healthy. But this message of you have to be strict carnivore for longer perfectly in order to heal, or you need carbs in order to heal, are those two perspectives that kind of are hard for us to be able to support.
And one thing just to finish off this whole conversation is, I don't want people to then also think, well, I've done carnivore for a week or even a month
yeah.
and it's not working, so I have SIRS, so let's just go there. while that may be true, I'll tell you that I have people, some doctors in the SIR space that send me their clients because they're not eating red meat or they're not able to tolerate the binder because the binder binds to a lot of the excess fat in your system. So if you understand that, you will feel the most beneficial eating a carnivore diet. So I don't want people to find this as a, well, what works for me is that I do need to add some carbs, or what does work for me is, oh, carnivore isn't working. You have to be honest with that. You gave it a full, honest try. And maybe that try is just 3 months. Maybe it's six months. Maybe it's a year. But if it doesn't work then I think you should explore other things. But I don't think you should just try a month and say, nope, this doesn't work, moving on. Because that then I think is an excuse.
Yeah, definitely.
I think the only other thing we kind of wanted to bring up today was, so I announced the Carnivore Summit and Laura was generous enough to be, is it a host? What is that role?
I guess a guest host. Yeah. Like a interviewer or a couple. Yeah.
I was sitting with Laura talking about, how we really wanted more unity in the carnivore community. And I thought of how maybe if we did like a summit, that would make sense. And it was just really to band together the carnivore community. I think it was 4 years ago, maybe more. I hosted the Carnivore 75 Heart and I put my whole heart and effort into that. And it spread like wildfire. I really think there was over 5,000 people that did it. And I'd get contacted by the military and how their whole group was doing it. And it was so powerful. And I haven't seen as much unity since then. And I know that there's so many disparate groups, like there's the Paul Saladino groups, there's Sean Baker, and then there's all the other like 30-day challenges, but we don't have a unified message. And honestly, it makes me really sad. I have never wanted to be like a quote unquote leader. I felt that I will support Paul, I will support Sean, I'll help them lead the, and maybe this is just the feminine side of me. And or that doesn't make sense. The womanly side of me being the supportive of the mass. That, anyways.
Why don't you mean?
But I realize, no, if you want to get something done and you have a vision for the community or what can help people heal, which is carnivore in so many ways, then you, if you want a job done, you got to do it yourself. And so I honestly was waiting for Amber to release the next carnivory con. And I don't know what's going on. I've been on talks with her, but I just decided I'd like to do a carnivore summit with just a bunch of medical practitioners and researchers and scientists, and no necessarily just people sharing their lives, because I want the medical establishment to take on this diet. So for me, it's, we will only get fully accepted if the medical establishment says, okay, use this diet as a healing tool. And I see it in the SIRS doctors, these MDs and DOs and NPs are saying, hey, Judy, can you work with my patient? Because we can't fix their gut. And so they get on a strict carnivore diet and some of them are now finally healing. And they have been doing the SIRS protocol. So I think if we can get in front of more people, we have a summit where there's 40 well-established doctors and researchers that are saying, look, we support a meat-focused diet. They're not all carnivore, but meat adjacent or carnivore adjacent. Then it will just give us more, hopefully, acceptance. And maybe some doctors and practitioners will look into it and say, oh, so Lisa's going to speak about carnivore and eye health. Kevin Stock's going to talk about carnivore and dentistry. And several other doctors are going to talk about metabolic syndrome, cholesterol, and all of these other things, to hopefully say we should be considering carnivore as a true therapeutic elimination diet tool.
Yeah, it's such a powerful collection of research. I think it's almost like a book in like taking everybody's expert opinions in these 1 hour forms and kind of like putting it all into this collection. Right. Where people are going to be able to access such a variety of opinions, right? I think somebody's talking on oxalates and like, it's kind of like all the benefits of the panel that we talked about, where you're getting to hear a variety of opinions where they're all centered around meat focused, like you mentioned, but they don't necessarily all agree on every single nuanced right. and point. And in some ways, that's what's great, is you get this opportunity to hear a variety of perspectives and takes all around this concept of you need to eat a lot of meat and then meat is going to make you healthy, but then you still get to hear some like nuance and disagreements within all of that.
Right. And I mean, it's going to be free. So it's 7 days, I think. I think that's what we're kind of going towards. It'll probably release in June. It's still TBD with that. We have some amazing sponsors that have supported this so that it can even happen. But I mean, it's been a lot of work behind the scenes. And I just hope, like my hope is that we can have doctors and practitioners and dietitians say, oh, Dr. Bigman's part of this. Like he's willing to support the Carnivore mm-hmm. Summit. Dr. Seneff is part of this, even though she's glyphosate and says to eat fermented veggies, like she's supportive of this. Hey, then maybe this is a diet that I should consider if I'm not fully well.
And like you said, too, it's also not a bunch of influencers and coaches.
It's not. I purposely did that.
Yeah, exactly. Like this is why, like you and I was like, this is not a place for me to share my story, right? Like this is not for people like me who are just people living this way, sharing our stories. I fill a different world. I'm not even trying to talk down about myself, but I often say like, I purposely am not an expert and don't put myself in that category because I want to make sure people see the difference. And so this is one of those opportunities where you're not just getting a bunch of influencers and coaches who are trying to round up people for their groups or trying to share their story or, you know, try to, it's just not, it is experts giving factual scientific information who have done the research. They are all experts in their specific niche and field,
right.
Who are all sharing actual science, which is hopefully what brings this level of credibility to it, right. More so than just a lot of us who share our story on YouTube, which I do think there's a lot of value in that. I'm not downplaying. I don't downplay what I do, but it's very different than what this is. And this is a different level of credibility and research that has been lacking, to be honest, because there's a lot of people like me that are out there sharing their stories, which is very powerful at bringing people in. But to convince the medical researchers and the science and like to move the needle outside of just individuals, we need something that's more credible like this.
Yeah. I mean, in a perfect world, I would have a Carnivore Summit for the influencers, right? Like the real life and stories and shares of carnivore healing the average person to have a fulfilling life. Like I would love to do that. We just don't have capacity. But
yeah,
like I just got contacted with a client and the doctor that recommended him to me was super against carnivore in the CIRS community. And I wrote him this really long explanation and gave him my case for carnivore. And he actually told him to go carnivore and to reach out to me. And so I'm like, that is a win. This DO that works with 10,000 plus people in Florida is willing to consider carnivore now. And that's what we need. We just need people to hear about carnivore and hear the cases. And it's just right now, not enough people are even exploring it. And so I hope that when I speak at CIRSX and I'm speaking just in front of practitioners, it's kind of scary, but a bunch of MDs and DOs and home environmental specialists and talking about why they need to do carnivore to heal further with CIRS, because it is the lowest inflammatory diet. And if this illness is just basically chronic inflammation in your body that's gone awry, right. Well, this is the best diet to support it, to remove any toxins that can cause inflammation in your system, especially the gut. So I'm excited. I no longer will be like, I will wait for X person to do this and I will support them behind the scenes. If I have to see this change and I want this change, then I will do what I can for the community to make it happen.
So when are you, do people have signups yet? Can they sign up for this? Is there a website ready or are we waiting for information from your newsletter?
No, it's not. So there is a website. It's not released. We are working very diligently right now, but I think a lot of the speakers will probably be sharing with their communities. They'll have their own links. Once it's ready to go, it will be blasted everywhere so that
you won't miss it. Yeah. So when you hear about the Carnivore Summit, this is what you'll know now, a little more context about what that is.
No, exactly. Yeah. So I'm really excited about the summit. You know, we've worked really hard and I'm very, very grateful for the experts that took their time out of their day to meet with us to really provide this care for our community at large.
Yeah. It's going to be really powerful. I'm excited and I can't wait for it to happen.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that was a lot, but I think we wanted to kind of obviously, like a KetoCon recap, maybe we're a little delayed for that. And if you're listening to this long after KetoCon, I think the point of all of this is that what's the point? The point is we all can disagree, but still share in a singular message I think that's important. I know you and I want to talk about that later. There's this problem with like disagreeing with people, but still being able to like get along with them
right. In
our society right now. So maybe that's a topic for another day. Like, how can you get along with people that you disagree with? We have a hard time in the world doing that. So maybe that's a topic for another day, but I think that's where you and I, our mindset is right now in the carnivore community.
Yeah. All right, guys, we will talk to you in 2 weeks.
Thanks for tuning in to the Cutting Against the Grain podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to share and leave us a review and leave any comments and questions on Apple Podcasts. We will read and answer your questions and comments on an upcoming podcast episode. This also helps us to share our real talk with more community members. You can also find me on my other podcast, Nutrition with Judy, on all podcast channels. You can also follow my content on Nutrition with Judy's Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. You can find Carnivore Cure in paperback, ebook, and audio on Amazon. I also have a blog post and weekly newsletter with nutrition and wellness updates. You can sign up at nutritionwithjudy.com. You can find Laura on Instagram at Laura E. Spath. You can follow along on her daily stories and see some of her funny skits. You can also find Laura on her YouTube channel where she shares tips on living a meat-based lifestyle. If you're wondering how much meat to eat in a day, week, or month, Laura has you covered. She also shares how to make a perfect sear on a steak and how extended fasting looks like in real life. You can find her YouTube channel by searching Laura Spath. Thanks again for listening to the Cutting Against the Grain podcast. And remember, make sure to cut against the grain.